you're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Yes, indeed you are, and welcome to another Anything Artist show here on Waiheke Radio, 88.3, 107.4 FM. Thanks very much to Trevor, just playing out with the ukuleles. How lovely. It's got me thinking about daylight saving already. But yes, we have, never mind daylight saving, let's rewind that and start again. Daylight saving still a couple of weeks ago. It doesn't stop us thinking of ukuleles and other wonderful things. Meanwhile, it's Anything Arty.
The Anything Arty Show, every Thursday from 8 till 9 on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. That's the Anything Arty Show, sponsored by the Artist Goldsmith Studio Connections on Eroa. Call in to see Christine's latest designs or phone 372 7809 to discuss a commission.
Yes, indeed. And thanks to David and Christine for looking after us again on the show. Much appreciated. And you can always check them out at Studio Connections, Ocean View Road on Eroa. And I suspect that they're going to be quite busy over the Rugby World Cup time, with the plenty of visitors coming to the island, always looking for some interesting things to be able to take home as remembrances of their time in this wonderful country and on our beautiful island. And they're bound to find some stuff in the cabinet, as I say, sitting down there. So you can always check them out, Ocean View Road, or indeed give them a call, because you can always check out the actual studio itself. And just check out some of the pieces that are in situ, as it were. Now, we have a mixed show tonight, little bits of everything popping up. And we have something that caught my eye was some of you may or may not be aware of a magazine. Some of you may or may not. I think I'll start the whole show all over again. Good evening. Welcome to the Anything Arty Show. Thursday evening, once again, here on Waiheke Radio, 88.3, 107.4 FM. Thanks to Dave and Christine for looking after us, the Artist Goldsmith, sponsoring the show. Much appreciated. Now, we've got a mixed evening for us tonight. There's little bits of everything. I wasn't quite sure what the theme was going to be, or even if we were going to have a theme this evening, but it's ended up being a musical theme. Things just kind of fell into place, giving us a bit of a musical theme. And one of the things that had taken my eye was in Monocle magazine, which some of you may be aware of. It's a fairly chunky international magazine that comes out once a month, usually ends up on the island about every second month, just for deliveries and things like that. And I've looked at it. There's been a couple of things I've sort of mentioned from this magazine over the past months. One of the things that caught my eye in the most recent edition that I got my hands on is this thing. What do they do? They do it regularly. Hang on, I'm just trying to find out what Monocle actually call it. The Livable Cities Index 2011. And as you suspect, this is where they have a team of people wandering around the world, checking out cities and deciding which are the most livable cities on the planet. We as in New Zealand have been in the... Well, sorry, New Zealand's not a city. I'm in danger of starting this whole show again. Auckland has been in this for a couple of years. Its ranking has increased, and I'll tell you where we are in a moment. But one of the things that interests me about the index and the comparisons that they make. So basically what they do is you get a bit of information about each city that they're talking about. And then you get some of the criteria listed as to what's given it the position it has in this Livable Cities Index. The only problem I have with it is that they don't use the same criteria for each city in their comparison. So it's a bit painful, because you kind of start looking down. So you might get four or five cities that have got 8 out of the 10 things you can compare. And it's not until you get to the last couple you think, hang on, that's a different bit of criteria. So it gets very frustrating. However, I'll give you some cities, and then you can think about where you think they might be. So this will be in place of our movie challenge this week. And I'm sorry to disappoint those of you who love the movie challenge, But we'll do this instead. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you, I'll give you ten. Well, let's do the top ten. I'll give you 10 cities, and then I'll get you to decide which ranking you would give them in terms of 1 to 10. So I'll give you a little bit of time to think about it. So what I'll do is I'll give you the cities, then we'll go into some other information that I've got here about... we'll head off something else that struck me about one of the reasons that Auckland got the placing it did was to do with something interesting that happened recently. So anyway, blah, blah, stop blethering. So here's the cities, right? You ready? You might need a pen and paper unless you get a really good memory. In no particular order, I'll give you the top 10 cities, and then you can rank them as which you think. So this is for the Livable Cities Index. So these are the most livable cities on the planet. So we have, in no particular order, Vienna, Tokyo, Sydney, Madrid, Berlin, Munich, Melbourne, Helsinki. I think that's it. Is that 10? No, sorry. Copenhagen and Zurich. All right, so did we get those? So it was Helsinki, Copenhagen, Zurich, Madrid, Berlin, Melbourne, Vienna, Munich, Sydney, and Tokyo. All right. I'll come back to those and let you know which are the top 10. But in the Auckland listing, one of the things it mentions about Auckland that puts it in the position it does is because of its cultural component. And one of the things it mentions in terms of the good thing about Auckland's culture is recognised by this particular sound here. Or let me put it another way. What you're about to hear is a significant factor in the ranking that we have in terms of being culturally... what's the word I want? Good, I guess. Good or what is any? Had you been at the Auckland Art Gallery Dawn Blessing on September the 1st, those would have been the blessings that you'd have heard on the way in and also on the way around the new gallery. The gallery officially opened on the 3rd, but they had the blessing at a dawn service on September 1. And that is that the Auckland Art Gallery is the cultural reason or the cultural significance, the cultural kudos, if you like, that the city gets is mentioned inside Monocle magazine. Auckland Art Gallery, it says here, open in August, so they're a little bit out with that, after multi-million, $121 million redevelopment. So there we go. Our wonderful gallery has helped us get to the position that we are in this Livable Cities Index. And I'll tell you where we are, dun, 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 because you still have to have a think about the other 10 places. We'll go through those in a short... Well, no, I'll definitely do it before the end of the show, because I can't have any of you lying awake at night wondering what the index rating was for Auckland and everybody else I mentioned. So I will go through it at the end of the show. However, talking about sleep, there's a lady, Arianna Huffington, that some of you may be aware of. You may even have heard me mention her on occasion. I know Greg Treadwell and I talked about her a couple of occasions on the old Bee Copy and Bulldogs program about press. Arianna is probably best known for Huffington Post, being a founder of Huffington Post. And not that long ago, she gave a talk to a group of businesswomen, and it's a TED talk. There's an organisation called TED, T-E-D, and they're extended it a bit. It used to be an annual event where they would get some of the leading thinkers around the globe together to present their big idea for society, and not the UK's big idea. This was a proper big idea, says he, dismissing a complete political platform in a single breath. And this was her talk that she gave. This was kind of like a breakaway TED group. This was for a talk of businesswomen that Arianna was talking to. And this was her big idea she presented to the ladies present. And it's an absolute cracker. I absolutely loved it. So check this out if you're looking for a big idea on how to succeed.
My big idea is a very, very small idea that can unlock billions of big ideas that are at the moment dormant inside us. And my little idea that will do that is sleep. This is a room of type A women. This is a room of sleep-deprived women. And I learned the hard way the value of sleep. 2.5 years ago, I fainted from exhaustion. I hit my head on my desk. I broke my cheekbone. I got 5 stitches on my right eye. And I began the journey of rediscovering the value of sleep. And in the course of that, I studied, I met with medical doctors, scientists, and I'm here to tell you that the way to a more productive, more inspired, more joyful life is getting enough sleep. And we women are going to lead the way in this new revolution, this new feminist issue. We are literally going to sleep our way to the top, literally. Because, unfortunately, for men, sleep deprivation has become a virility symbol. I was recently having dinner with a guy who bragged that he had only gotten 4 hours sleep the night before. And I felt like saying to him, but I didn't say it, I felt like saying, you know what, if you had gotten 5, this dinner would have been a lot more interesting. There is now a kind of sleep deprivation one-upmanship. Especially here in Washington, if you try to make a breakfast date and you say, how about 8 o'clock? They're likely to tell you, 8 o'clock is too late for me, but that's okay, you know, I can get a game of tennis in and do a few conference calls and meet you at 8. And they think that means that they are so incredibly busy and productive, but the truth is, they're not. Because we at the moment have had brilliant leaders in business, in finance, in politics, making terrible decisions. So a high IQ does not mean that you're a good leader, because the essence of leadership is being able to see the iceberg before it hits the Titanic. And we've had far too many icebergs hitting our Titanics. In fact, I have a feeling that in Lehman Brothers, was Lehman Brothers and Sisters, they might still be around. Brothers were busy, you know, just being hyper-connected 24/7, maybe a sister would have noticed the iceberg because she would have woken up from her 7.5 or 8 hours sleep. and have been able to see the big picture. So as we're facing all the multiple crises in our world at the moment, what is good for us on a personal level? What's going to bring more joy, gratitude, effectiveness in our lives, and be the best for our own careers, is also what is best for the world. So I urge you to shut your eyes and discover the great ideas that lie inside us, to shut your engines and discover the power of sleep. Thank you.
There we go. What do you reckon? Sleep your way to success. I'm all for that. I think that's absolutely wonderful. I'll start, maybe not right now, although I felt I was half asleep when we started. But there we go. Arianna Huffington and her big idea. I might slot some more big ideas in over the coming months. So some absolute crackers. Now, let's just have a look at some of the things that are happening around the island for a moment or two. And then we're going to go to a New Zealand singer called thinking about the art gallery, a lady called Anna Rugis, who some of you may know, but anyway, doesn't matter if you don't, you're about to hear her. Anna was, and it's a recording that was done of her singing at the some songs from her CD that was new out at the time, but she was just singing unaccompanied in the sort of a kitchen area of the art gallery. So it's she's got a stunning voice. Anyway, that's something coming up. Now, what have we got on the island at the moment? Our galleries have got still till the 5th, so that's actually today, tomorrow. Do you know what? I can't even remember the date. No, I can't be, because tomorrow's a big cup day. let's cancel that. We have just opened last week. Starting last week on the 2nd was Tivoli opening of Black in a Different Light. I mentioned that a little bit last week. But this has got some stunning stuff in it. Get in, check out what's in Tivoli. Toy Gallery. Man, I'm having a good night tonight. That's the Toy, T-O-I, not T-O-I, Toy Gallery, Ocean View Road. And in there, and it's really nice to see some of her work back on display again, is Penny Erickson has got some beautiful pieces on display at the Toy Gallery Black in a Different Light exhibition. So get in there and have a look at some of the amazing stuff that she's got going in there. We've got Joe Smith in there, Chris Bailey's in there, Sally Smith is exhibiting as well, and Glendale Rangihuiata's exhibit, and apologies for pronunciation, is exhibiting as well. So they've got, what's that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 artists exhibiting in the Toy Gallery. So there's a really nice mix of things to go and check out. Have a look at what's happening there. You can have a look at Crouch, Touch, Pause. Oh! There's no fourth word in there because that's copyright to our boys on a Wednesday night with their Crouch, Touch, Pause, Engage Rugby World Cup show, of course, every Wednesday here on Waiheke Radio now throughout the cup time. And that's going from 7 till 8 in the evenings. That's after Sandy's stereo tours and before Function. So check that out next week on Wednesday. Where was I going with this? Oh, yes, Crouch, Touch, Pause is at the Waiheke Community Gallery. Which has got some interesting stuff all in a theme to do with a sort of rugby orientation and blacks and things like that. So that's worth having a check out as well at the Community Gallery, just to see what's what in there. What else have I got here in my hand? Ah, yes, now, Adult Literacy are back again with their Great Read. So it's the happened last year. It's happening again this year. This is at the Waiheke Library, and it's going to be. Oh, it's going to. Oh man, I just can't believe it. This is a phenomenal show. I think I'll just lose the recording of this show somewhere. So when you come to listen again, I've got to put something completely different up. I have no idea what I'll put up. I might put a play on or something like that. A play or something like that. Because the World Literacy Day, which is great, is on today. So the Waiheke Library was having the Great Read at 10:30 this morning till 12 o'clock. So don't hurry down there because it's over. But we had the adult literacy team back out again. We, of course, had the... we were very fortunate to be able to record some of the amazing stories that were put together last year by the group, which they put out on CD to their members, and it was really nice for us to, as a station, to be able to be involved in putting those stories together for them to record those. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do something again with them this year, which would be nice. So they were down at the library doing some of their story reading down there, which is great. And, of course, last week we had the everything's last week. Last week we had the fashion show, or fashion week as it was, in town, which another success there. And Janine Clarkin was involved in a lot of the show. It's one of our island fashionistas, although I should say fashion designer, sorry, to put it properly. She was involved in staging most of the shows, in fact, that were on over Fashion Week, which was fantastic. And there's an interesting piece just about her experience of that in this week's Marketplace that you can check out in there. So that was nice to know that was another success. That area around Wynyard, sort of wharf area that they've done up, is a nice spot now for a walk around. I quite enjoyed having a little wander about there. So that was a nice location for the Fashion Week to, I think they were the first actually event in the new area, the new event centre. So that was very cool. See them down there. And music, Anna Rugis, I had mentioned. So this is a recording of her... just singing, it's just herself, no accompaniment. And as I said before, it was sort of in a sort of cafe area in the art gallery. And it's a interesting piece. Just the songs, just in terms of her voice. So for somebody who can hold a tune, as they say, with no accompaniment and no electronics these days is quite an achievement for a lot of the electronically constructed music that we're getting. So Anna Rugis was born, she's New Zealand born, she's virtually sung all her life, and she's been a backing, amongst many other things, that she's been a backing singer for Cat Stevens, The Kinks, Van Morrison, and this was some an extra, about three songs from her her CD that had come out, Traffic in Gold, and this would have probably come out originally maybe 18 months ago. And the style of vocals of this particular CD was about from the Hebridean Islands, so it's a lot of intricate melodies. On the actual CD itself, it's there's a lot of multi-tracking with sophisticated harmonies, that weave a whole tapestry of sound. What we're going to hear, and the beauty of this, and the artistry for me, if you like, of this, which is why it gets a slot on Anything Arty, is because this is just her in a canteen singing her songs. So let's have a little listen to three of the songs from Anna Rugis.
Now's the time to pay the piper, put your penny in the tin. Not enough to let you up, but it's enough to get you in. Yadam, buddy, yadam, dadam, 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 dadam. Like it's just another journey, you can be a lot more. Hawkins, but never if you interfere. Hey, 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 hey. It's enough to get you in.
Traffic in traffic in gold.
There's a traffic in gold.
There's a traffic in.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio.
Waiheke Radio presents albums that changed everything.
Ladies!
Everyone has an album that changed their lives.
Oh, this track, man, I love this track.
Each week, we'll be taking a personal look at the albums that changed our lives.
It's the best song on the best album.
After I heard this album, I didn't listen to music in the same way ever again.
If I was ever going to get a really big tattoo, that would be it.
And suddenly, it was like the battle lines had been drawn, and I was on the side of the Smiths.
I'd never heard anything like it before, and it changed everything.
The albums that changed everything, Thursday nights at 9 p.m. and 2 p.m. on Sundays here on Waiheke Radio.
The Anything Arty Show, every Thursday from 8 till 9 on Waiheke Radio. 88.3 and 107.4 FM. That's the Anything Arty Show, sponsored by the Artist Goldsmith Studio Connections on Iroha. Call in to see Christine's latest designs or phone 372 7809 to discuss a commission.
Yes, you are indeed. The Anything Arty Show here on Thursday night between 8 and 9 p.m. Just going to cruise into a better last half hour. Now, says he, falling at the first hurdle. There we go. Now, before we went, before we did have a break. Ah, stop it. Right. Albums that changed everything. Yes, 9 o'clock tonight. I've got no idea what album it is. Last week was a cracker. I thoroughly enjoyed that. This week, I don't know. It's a mystery. So I'm looking forward to seeing whatever comes up at 9 o'clock. But I tell you what, the selection of albums that we've had, it must be nearly 2 months, maybe a little bit longer now, have just been phenomenal. So we'll see what we shall, or we'll hear what we shall hear tonight at 9 on the albums that changed everything. Now, we had heard from Anna Rugis, who I'd put in. I haven't done a lot with music in terms of on the Anything Arty Show, I have to say, over the past couple of months. But I just really like the notion of somebody, a bit like somebody who can play an instrument really well, who they can just grab the instrument and play, and everybody just kind of stops and listens and just goes, wow. And Anna Rugis, that recording was done, as I say, it was just recorded in a sort of cafeteria in the art gallery. Just her singing some of the songs off her, what then was her new CD called Traffic in Gold, which had come out. So, I mean, if you can I'm sure you can still get a hold of a copy. It really is worth a listen to. I have to read you this from the Ponsonby News. This was this was their quote about her album when it came out. Elfin Anna Rugis began to sing. Her acoustic mouth music could only be described as mercurial, magical, and many moons ancient. It's as if it has slipped from the earth and taken to air to fly around the walls on wings. It's about as good as some of the reviews you get for wines, which I think are poetry in themselves. I might have an evening of reading wine reviews. Just they're an art form in their own right, I reckon. Now I'm going to zoom to a guy. I mentioned this guy last week, and I didn't get near him. It's just, sorry, I'm looking and I'm thinking, will I go there or not? Yes, I think I will. This is a guy, Aravind Adiga, an author who, he was actually on a Booker Prize winner for his White Tiger book maybe 2 years ago. I think it might have been when that book came out. This is an interview, and White Tiger was about, set in India, and was really about corruption and inequality. This book, his latest book that has come out, is set in Mumbai, It's called Last Man in Terror, and it's about property development in Mumbai, and it's based on a true story, which he'll explain about, and the phenomenon of property development in places as populated as India, and in particular in the city of Mumbai. It's quite fascinating. He'll explain the whole premise, so it doesn't need any more from me other than to say this is Kirsty Lang, who's an interview with Aravind, and he's just having a conversation about where the idea for the book came from, and it's quite fascinating. So here's Aravind Diga.
Well, it came from a newspaper article here in 2007 when I had just moved to Mumbai from New Delhi, and I read of an offer of redevelopment made to an old building in Mumbai. Now, redevelopment effectively means that an old building is going to be broken down and something new built there. And this is a very Mumbai phenomenon because the city is fully built up. So this was a fairly common phenomenon and still is. What struck me about the story was that the building was a cooperative housing society, which meant that everyone had to agree before the building could be broken down. It was a very generous offer being made by a developer, but one old man did not want to take it because he just didn't want the money, and his eyesight was bad, so he wanted to stay in a building because he could move around. And his neighbors, who had been his neighbors for 30 or 40 years, were unhappy because all of them wanted the money, quite understandably. The developer was making an offer of something like 300% the prevailing market rate for what was an old building. And, you know, the newspaper followed up a few days later, and the old man said something like, you can live with people for 40 years and not know who they are until, you know, money comes into the question. And it really struck me as a fascinating issue because I couldn't make up my mind as to whom I'd support. It seemed like a question that was crucial to life in a democratic society itself. So I began looking at other such buildings where such offers had been made, and that's how the novel started.
The city itself, Bombay, is the other principal character in this book, isn't it?
Yes, I'd say it is the principal character, really.
The city in your novel is one populated by incomers, by migrants from elsewhere, a little bit like Los Angeles, a place where people come to remake themselves, to live the dream.
Well, yes, some people like me come here to remake themselves, but most who come here come for work. They come to Bombay and to Delhi and to Bangalore out of sheer economic necessity. Migration is a very key phenomenon here in India, as I suppose it is in China too.
But both this book and The White Tiger do look at the big changes that have been brought about by India's economic boom over the past 20 years. And I wonder whether you see your role as a writer in documenting these changes.
No, I wouldn't say documenting. For me, the change that's happening is it's central to everything I see. I wonder about the change happening to India every day, whether it's good or bad. I'm ambivalent about it, but I'm not critiquing it. I do think that the narratives from India have to change. That when I look at some of the novels written by Indians that come to England, they're talking about an India that I think doesn't exist around me anymore. There's a new kind of very dynamic India, and narratives in English and in other Indian languages have to reflect this now.
Your Booker-winning novel, The White Tiger, did very well in India, but you did come in for quite a lot of criticism, didn't you, in some circles, for sort of highlighting the poverty and corruption. Why do you think that was?
Well, it's true. It's a very odd reception in India in that it was a bestseller here, and it was selling well even before I won the Booker. But at the same time, it did upset many people. I think there's an odd way in which any novel about India is taken to be a statement about the country in a way that wouldn't be true in England. There was a young writer the year I won the Booker, and he had set a novel in Yorkshire about poor people in Yorkshire. And no one in England thought that was a reflection on the condition of England. It's a very uniquely Indian way of looking at novels, that they're seen as great statements about the country, even if they're very clearly works of fiction.
Did it upset you, that?
Yes, I think it did, because you know I don't come from the background that most Indian writers come from. I didn't grow up in a big city. My background is much more provincial. I'm from a smaller town, and I had a very conservative upbringing. And most of my family still live in small towns across India, and they're very conservative people by and large. So this kind of debate would it did sting me, because you know I think it's a serious charge to be accused of disparaging your country. So it has been a kind of difficult time for me, because I also fell ill last year. But it was important to finish this book in time, because in a sense, I feel this is explaining myself more fully to people here especially those who might have been upset by the White Tiger.
In what way do you feel that this book, The Last Man in the Tower, is explaining you yourself more fully?
Well, I think it's because it's a much bigger book. It's twice the size of The White Tiger. I think it deals with some of the similar issues, which is, you know, ultimately The White Tiger was, in a sense, a man's quest for freedom. And that's fundamentally how I saw it, not as a socioeconomic statement. And this book, it continues those themes, both in a more radical and in a more conservative way. More conservative in the fact that its language is more conventional. The White Tiger was... One of the things that upset people was the use of expletives, for instance. And the language is more traditional in this book. Whereas I think it's more radical in its core because the White Tiger was a lower class figure committing a murder and running away. But this book shows very solid middle class people changing. And I thought that would be the real challenge, to write a book about people like the people who'll be buying the book in India, but middle-class people, and showed them changing.
You said in one interview, this is my last novel set in contemporary Indian reality because there's been too much controversy surrounding White Tiger. My next novel's going to be about arranged marriages. Is that true?
Well, only in India would you get asked the question, you know, why not write about arranged marriages? Yeah, a lot of Indian fiction, especially in English, and this is true both of Indian novels that make it to England and Indian novels that you know, are big here, are set in the past. They're either set in colonial times, when it's fairly easy to identify the heroes and the villains, or they're, you know, they tend to be about issues like arranged marriage, which is very popular here. I think, you know, I've written three books now on present-day India, and each one has run into controversy here. This book has just come out in India, and I'm expecting the usual. And I sometimes do wonder if I've had enough. I was joking about the arranged marriages.
I thought you were, because you then added, I'm going to have my own first, and then I'll write about it, which didn't seem like your
obviously, style. No, I thought it was obviously sarcastic, but, you know, it was taken very literally here. And I actually did get a marriage proposal after that, which reminds me, I keep getting into trouble here, because I say things that I think are clearly ironic, and you know, you should always be careful. I do realize when you're a writer and you're reaching a large audience in a country like India, that there is a kind of responsibility upon you to be careful with what you say, and I haven't always been careful, and I regret that. But I thought this would qualify as something that was obviously a joke, but perhaps, you know, I shouldn't have made that. I won't be writing about arranged marriages, but I think this is the last book I plan to write about, you know, that has anything to do with socioeconomic change in India. There are many other narratives to write about here. There's so much happening. There are other things that interest me as a writer. And to go through this trial, you know, trouble each time to be accused of disloyalty to India, or, you know, I think that's it would be tough for anyone, and it's particularly difficult for someone like me. As I said, I'm.
I think it would be a pity. My background
is much more conservative.
It'd be a pity for you to give up just because you've been criticised.
No, it's not just that I'm criticised. I think this is the wrong kind of thing for, you know, a writer, because I see myself as a writer, not as a journalist or as a social critic. And I shouldn't be arguing with people who feel that I'm misrepresenting India's growth rate. I mean, it's absurd. It's just going to destroy me as a writer. And in this sense, I do envy, you know, younger writers in England who can write whatever they want. You know, they may reach a smaller audience because they're not writing about an exotic land. But on the other hand, no one's accusing them of disloyalty to the country, and they're not being asked absurd questions. So they're being allowed to develop more properly as writers. And I think, just as a writer, I think this is not how you want to be allowed to develop. You want to be dealing with people, with literary critics who have problems with the way you write, not answering broader questions that shouldn't be asked of novelists.
Two frequencies, one sound. 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Yes, indeed, and you're listening to the Anything Artist Show here on Thursday evening from 8 till 9 on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And we were just listening to Katie Lang having a conversation with Aravind Diga on his new book, The Last Man in the Tower. And I reckon Liz at Tivoli would be a likely person to have that one available. And it sounds a really interesting read, as in fact does White Tiger, which I haven't managed to get a hold of either yet, so I think I might have to trot down and see Liz, see if she's got a copy in there as well, which will be good. Now, Sorry, all this makes sense to me because I know what I'm looking at, but unfortunately it doesn't make great radio. I know I have to do the top 10 of the livable cities, so we need to come to that. I've got a, I found a really interesting piece of poetry or selection of poetry readings that was actually done at, talking of Tivoli, that was done at Tivoli in November of last year. Unfortunately, Scott Ewing was on hand to get a recording of it all. So it has some of our island poets, some who were actually reading last month. I think it would have been down at Artworks from the, I think it's the Literary Club that meets at the Catherine, is it Catherine Mitchell Centre we have on the island? I'm going from memory, which is always a fatal thing to do for me. But this, yeah, so there was a group down at Tivoli reading. It was fantastic because it was a, it was out in the sunshine, the deck chairs were out, and people were just kind of lazing around, a nice crowd around the place to have a listen to a selection of poets. So I managed to get hold of a copy of that recording. So that's going to play us out tonight in just a couple of minutes. It's just something that's coming up. If you're going off island 24th and 25th September, If you enjoy collect or because I know a number of the people people on the island are into doll art, which is doll making, making dresses for dolls, etc. There's a festival of doll art which is in town. It's up at I told you I should never go from memory. dear, it's up at Freeman's Bay Community Centre. Well done. And 52 Hepburn Street, Tucked Away in Ponsonby. I'll mention this again, but it's on the 24th and 25th of September from 10 till 4. Adults are $6, children are 4. I'm mentioning it even though it is off island because I know a number of people on the island work with art and with dolls. So that's going to be the Festival of Doll Art, 24th and 25th September 2011. And I will give that another mention later on. Right, now, the top 10 cities in terms of the most livable. This was at the Monocle magazine I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, the Livable Cities Index 2011. So let me give you this. We'll do it in the descending order, shall we? So is that right? Descending, you say? We'll go from 10 to 1, whatever that is. So number 10 was, see how many of these that you got close to or got correct. Number 10 was Madrid. Number 9 was Tokyo. 8 was Berlin. 7 was Sydney. 6 was Vienna. 5 was Melbourne. 4 was Munich. 3 was Copenhagen. 2 was Zurich. Or Zurich, and 1, dun, 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 dun. This is, if you want to be in the most livable city on the planet right now, according to this piece of research, you need to be in Helsinki. That is the place to be for the most livable city. How good's that? So there's a whole long reason as to why they rated it as good as it is. And those of you who... Don't get me started on cycling, but yes, those of you who love cycling, go live in Helsinki. That's one of the reasons of the most livable city. So instead of banging on about making cycling so superb on the island, let us four-wheel drivers just rip the roads up and you guys go to Helsinki and enjoy your cycling over there. That sounds like a good compromise. Where did Auckland come, I hear you murmur? Auckland came number 13. And that's up from number... Oh, in the past couple of years, we've been at number 20. So we've rocketed up the charts, as they say, to number 13. And even though it is a bit dodgy how they work all this out, I wouldn't be at all surprised to find this statistic tucked away somewhere in council's rating of, look, you know, we're moving on our way to becoming the most livable city. I think that's still the mayor's dream. But it says here under Auckland... a unified council and a new start for the Rugby World Cup host. Aucklanders live in exciting times. There you go, in case we didn't know it already. It's always quite interesting when you read about your own city in another, in an international magazine, then it kind of puts into perspective other things that I've read about other cities that I thought, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And then you read what they write about yours and you go, where did they get that from? I find that interesting. Right, here we go. It's time to finish off the show. So, yes, thanks to the Artist Goldsmith, Studio Connections, Oniroa, David and Christine, thank you for looking after the show, being our sponsors. Next week, we'll be back from 8 till 9, Anything Artist Show. I've got an interview at last with Ingrid Bezens on the island, artist, so we'll get into that next week as well. But we're going to go out on the Tivoli poetry readings, and there's some fabulous... Now, this is about November last year, so I remember around the time we were having the RJ Bargy with the community board that was coming together. There's an amazing opening poem about that that will just set you back. And there's also a poem in there from Alex Stone, one of our opinionated islanders on Island Life on a Saturday, about rugby, interestingly enough. So there's a very topical theme still tucked away in there. So till next week, bye now.
I have to admit I've had a little bit of a realisation today, and that is that I hate doing poetry readings on Waiheke. That is basically because a lot of my poems, or there's a book over there that basically describes most of my poems as being political poems, and I've often found on reading them on Waiheke, where we have such a lovely, harmonious community, especially in terms of crossing the Māori-Pākehā divide, that they often feel to me like they go down like lead balloons. So what I thought I'd do today is try to show that I'm not that one-sided and read half and half, so half of them are going to be political and half of them, if I think I'm up to it and there's nobody in the audience who knows too much about what I'm reading, will be love poems. But we'll start with the political. Ka whai?
This one's called Community Board Brawl. There's trouble in the hen house. Feathers flying at rooster gate. They've hit the ground running, crowing, "We have the mandate!" Secret squawkings in the mangroves. A quick ring round on the run. Criteria scratched out in the turf. And then the deal is done. Beaks snapping. Portfolios flapping. Strutting round the patch. Puffed up, fluffed up egos. Our golden girl's no match. She's been drowned out by the squawkus of this raucous caucus. And the rest of us are ruffled up in shock. Yes, there's trouble in the hen house, and they'd better pull their heads in. Yes, they'd better pull their heads in before they wind up on the block.
Got to be the funnest way to spend an afternoon. Okay, next up we've got Jim, and we'll be very strict on the time today, so we've got Basil here is going to give us the hard eye if we're over 5 minutes. So off we go, Jim.
No problem. 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute. I wrote this when I was on the West Bank. It's called Hebron. I am walking on the wall, dizzy from the soft breeze of orange blossom and rubble. It would be so easy to fall. The wall is narrower than expected, and the wind whips up a cocktail of distantly remembered acrid smoke and today's tear-gassed olives. On the honed edge of the wall's capstone, my feet begin to bleed. It would be much simpler just to dive into the certain comfort of a tribal embrace. But there are others up here along the wall, working to hold this equipoise. Perhaps if 10 of us achieved perfect balance at the same moment, the wall would vanish.
Yep, you guessed it. It seems that in the 1930s, the Crown put a road through one of Ngāti Whātua Ki Ōrākei's only two cemeteries. And that, my dear, was Rautara Street. We used to joke about whether it was Rautara or whether it was Rautara, and I won't explain the difference for people who don't speak Māori. But now what I think, and I'm finding this more and more, and it won't be the last time I say this, I'm sure, We have no idea what was before our homes. Our backyards could all be full of bones. And all the Queen's horses and all the Queen's men will never put any of it together again.
Come live with me and be my love upon my old inherited farm. And I will offer rugby and TV and bleary eyes in the wee small hours while mist and moon and owls align outside. I'll know at nights we might see full moon rainbows in faintly tinted shades of silver. Come live with me and be my love upon this fecund patch of soil, and there will be dawns of cold blue light, days of mud, and evenings softly sliced with shafts of golden green between the corded crumpled hills, and sometimes a heavy dew. Come live with me and be my love in the house that I will build for you. And there will be rust and junk and old machines and sky and rain and kids and love.
Good, eh? Now, this next one.
Hard edges. This woman has hard edges. This woman's skin is cold to touch. This woman's walk is stiff. She wraps her leather jacket tight around her bones. This woman does lions on the kitchen table, waiting for her man to come home. Waits for the sound of the boot on the gravel and the key in the lock. This woman is chilling inside, and the chemicals sliding in back of her mouth brings no warmth. It makes the minutes stack like bony white logs on the woodpile inside her head. Waiting for her man to come home, knowing he'll bring no fire, dead and cold like her. They'll sit and chill till the sun flashes through the cracks in the shades, till they've run out of words and they've run out of speed, and even the sun brings no fire.
On Saturdays, the girl with the Waiheke-shaped ponamu learns a new language. She drives past the Causeway Sports Club, rams, balls bulging. Past the mansion, batches, man's balls bulging. The beaches, the council breaching signs for Ostend Market and Tahi Road's steely teeth. She drives the gravel tongue, gorse in her throat. She is learning a new language. Song of myself plays along the Onatangi Highway. Two hawks fly the lines, too loud to say in the house. But here, the ring is an amphitheater. The vineyards applaud her appearance. The green curtains part and she enters stage left. She wraps her hands in a pink soliloquy, flicking patios in the mirror. Mat trang jab, mat wiyang sang hook, sock clap spinning elbow, mat wiyang clap spinning back fist. She is learning a new language. Her toes pirouette through black elastic sleeves. Her tongue makes way for the black moulded mouthguard. She is learning. A new language gathers in the astropelago of words strung around her throat. She chants them through her core, belly to shoulder, arms to wrist, during the Wai Kru Ram Moi. Starry wet tea towel flicks through hips, quads, thighs. Song comes in rapid bursts. Kao trung, straight knee strike. Tea tut, roundhouse kick. Thip trung, straight foot thrust. Krado ti, jump kick. Parenthesis to the fury of fists. Chock, chock, chock. On Saturdays, she learns a new language.
Commercial radio with bland, faceless DJs, too many commercials, and lazy music programming. When they said, what's your card number and can you pick it up at the station, you said no. You said yes to Waiheke Radio. It's good to know you make a stand where it counts.